Welcome to The Bare Truth. My name is Julia.
And my name is Andy.
Every week we interview someone from a different area of interest who's expressing themselves from the core of their being in a unique and authentic way.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 99 of The Bare Truth. I'm Andy White and I'm with...
Julia. Hello everyone.
And we have on the line Phil Dingra, who is, as well as a being a programmer, he's an iPhone and iPad developer, so he's a man after my own heart. I'm sure Julia will allow us to talk about that for a bit. But he's also got a couple of books, Character and Chemistry and Life-Altering Experiences. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Thanks for having me aboard. This is all very exciting. This is the first podcast I'm doing for Character and Chemistry. And so hopefully this is the beginning of a big publicity tour of some sorts.
Well, I'll tell you something, Phil. Both of our listeners will tell lots of our friends.
It's very good. It's exciting. I'm delighted that we have Phil and we're the first. We're his first, particularly as talking. I've read Phil's book. Unfortunately, Andy hasn't had the privilege yet. I can send it to you, Andy.
Please do. No, seriously.
Yeah, it's really, really, really interesting because, of course, relationship is kind of been my driving force like my entire life. And, I've done lots of research. I am the Victorian explorer of relationships. So reading your book, Phil, was fascinating because you're kind of talking about how should we make our choices when we make a relationship with somebody and whether we should look at the chemistry aspect or their character. And it's, what was it? Yeah, was that in essence how you would describe your book first?
Absolutely. I've had a lot of trouble finding the one. In fact, I haven't found the one yet. I'm 30 years old and I'm still searching and I've read a ton of dating books. And I find that among the ones that I've read, a lot of them are lacking on how to evaluate your potential partner. I think it's a potentially touchy subject or sensitive subject because no one ever wants to think that they're judging someone. But everybody knows someone who you just wish they could see the pattern of negative choices they make. Everyone knows someone who always picks an abusive boyfriend, or someone who picks always wild and crazy girlfriends. And my book is about determining whether you should stay or you should go, whether this is someone you should keep seeing more of, whether the personality of the person you're seeing is the kind of thing that will build a long, sustaining, and happy relationship.
Yeah, so this has this been sort of informed by your own journey of have you perhaps picked the same type of girl again and again, or is it from watching? Is it both?
I think I've seen patterns in myself, and I hate to get all Freudian about this, but in some ways I feel like I pick a lot of women who are like my mother, who I have a loving relationship with my mother, but we always get into arguments. And sometimes I seek that out because I have a lot of great conversations with my mother, but you don't really want to have a relationship with someone who you're always getting into pissing contests with. And so I've seen patterns in myself. I think the biggest pattern that I've seen in myself, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, is that for a long period of my dating career, I guess you could call it, or my dating history, I've been a very reactive dater. I've taken things like Myers-Briggs, which if listeners aren't familiar with, or they might have heard the term like, oh, I'm an ENTP, which
I'm an INTJ.
INFJ?
INTJ.
INTJ, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think you can't spend too much time studying relationships without knowing your particular type. It seems like I bump into a lot of people who just know off the top of their hand what their Myers-Briggs type is. So for me, I'm an ENTP.
Ah.
And according to that, I'm the problem with the Myers-Briggs is that it has test, retest inconsistency. I've taken it one time, and then I take it again 6 months later, and then I get a slightly different score, which doesn't speak to the reliability of the statistic.
Yeah, I suppose that the profiles, is it perhaps if we explain for the listeners, it can be a choice, isn't it, between a preference between kind of extrovert expression or introvert, or kind of somebody who acts more with their intuition or logic, or somebody who is makes decisions by thinking or feeling, or somebody who kind of flies by the seat of their pants or plans. And of course, actually, all of us probably could do both sides, but we tend to have a preference for one. And that, do you think that could be different in different situations as well?
Absolutely. I think so. We were talking about patterns or negative patterns in myself. And when I took one of these Myers-Briggs tests, it gave me a lot of insight into the idea that I think about situations by feeling through them. And so I gauge the way a relationship is going, or the way a date is going, based on the flow of energy, based on the dynamic nature, based on the movement of the interaction, while as someone else might reason through the quality of the interaction. They might say to themselves after they're done with their date, they might think, wow, this person is a very fascinating person, someone who I have a lot in common with, someone who I could spend a lot of time with. A very rational analysis of the situation. Whereas I found that in my dating pattern, I would come away from a date and think, wow, I just feel a lot of energy, or I feel my heartbeat rising, or I feel like we're moving with a very high pace, almost like I would interpret a date in the same way that I would interpret a favorite song. And the problem with that kind of, you know, there's pluses and minuses with that kind of thinking. The plus side is that all my relationships have been very passionate. They always, even if they end quickly, they're like a candle that burns brightly and then just fades out. But the negative side of that is a lot of the times I'll get very I'll rush in headlong into these things. They'll happen so quickly, because if you're just feeling your way through something, sometimes you can also just end up falling into a very rapid dance, and you could end up just spinning around the dance floor of your relationship. And it's only when you step aside, take a vacation, or take a little break that you realize, okay, things have been moving too fast. I'm getting completely emotional about this. I don't even know who this person is. In fact, I don't even like this person.
So is that chemistry? That's your acting on the chemistry rather than the character bit. Is that?
Absolutely. And so, yeah. And, I've never really quite thought about it this way, but probably up until recently, I've only dated according to chemistry, according to the feel of the moment, the feel of the person. I've even done some very immature, superficial chemistry reads, saying, I really like the way this person looks. She has some sparkle in her eye. And I'll write off that, or I'll just derive so much pleasure and happiness just based on that one attribute, kind of like falling in love with a movie because you like the soundtrack, not because it's actually a good movie, but just because you like, or let's say you like the set design, and just fixating on one attribute without really thinking about the whole picture. And it's only until recently, in the past year or so, that I've become a lot more rational about evaluating dating and my potential partners.
Is this something that by just stepping back, you've reflected on yourself and thought you might then start looking at dating in a different way? Or have you met somebody where it's been a different experience, which has started to mean that you're going to look in a different way at things?
So I think the stepping back is important. That's something that I talked about at Hallmark. Maybe this phrase is already out there, but I call it the power of pause. It's something that I've learned through meditation, that if you take a break, that if you step back, that if you quiet your mind, you're just much more better at seeing things for the way they actually are and not what your emotions tell you there are, or even not what your logical side of your brain can tell you what they are. Because there can be, just as there can be a tyranny of your emotions, there can also be a tyranny of logic, where your logic is saying, this person is good for me, this person is a nice person, the person I'm dating would start a great family for me. And if you take a break, if you take a vacation, you might wake up and say, I don't care about those things. That logic is crap because I don't feel anything in my body for this person. And likewise, you can have a tyranny of your emotions. If you spend every single day with someone, every night is exciting, and then when you actually take a break, when you go on a 2-week vacation or 2-day vacation, let's say, you might be able to see that emotion for just what it is. Maybe it's just lust. Maybe it's situational. Maybe it's all novelty. And so I'm a big advocate in instructing your knowledge of character and chemistry by taking periodic breaks.
And you Googled, didn't you? In reading your book, you were thinking about character. And I liked I liked the sort of aspects that build or are to do with character, which was, it was trust, respect, responsibility, fairness, caring, and citizenship. And you'd looked that up, hadn't you? And that had informed how you were starting to think about whether a person was going to be somebody you could, in effect, spend your life with, or a long time anyway.
Yes. So it's amazing what people type into Google. I have a blog with 2,000 posts or so. And oftentimes I look at the server logs, and a lot of my hits come from people just asking Google like they're talking to an oracle. People come to my site because they type in, is ignorance bliss? Or is the person I'm dating, is this someone I should be with? And I've found myself many times at 4 a.m. unable to sleep, unable to figure out a problem in my life, just Googling for desperate answers. And there was a similar situation that happened near the beginning of this year, where I was really stressed out about a lot of handful of my friendships. And these are friendships with guys, so it actually had nothing to do with dating. And I couldn't figure out how to resolve my arguments with these two friends. And these were two separate arguments. And we got into massive fights. And in just one of those rare moments of soul searching, I just Googled, like, well, what is character? What is the meaning of character? Because I needed some sort of way of understanding these conflicts, rather than just using my emotion. I was upset at this person was upset at me. And you can't resolve a conflict just based on the quantity of anger that each partner has. You need some sort of universal system, some third party. There's a reason why people go to, instead of litigating, they go through arbitration, where they have a third party who's cool-headed and listens to both sides and tells you which way is up. And so when I Googled character, this thing came up by the Josephine Institute called Character Counts. And they have a thing called the Six Pillars of Character, which you just mentioned. And when I read that, it struck me like a bolt of lightning. It was just so simple, yet so comprehensive. I tried to think of every single slight that anyone has had ever done to me in my entire life, and or any time I've ever been disgusted with someone. And every single time I could find some sort of connection to that character rubric. So I felt like and their system, which has an acronym that sort of dovetails with the word terrific, the spelling of the word terrific. So trust, respect, responsibility, fairness, caring. And they call the last one citizenship, but I like to just call it community. I found that that is a 360-degree assessment of someone's character. And what I notice is that some people think that character is just one or two of those traits. I have some friends who love being blunt, love being brutally honest, love telling you like it is, even if it hurts your feelings. And they think that just by being completely honest with people, that that's enough to have good character. But I think it's also important to instruct that honesty with compassion, with respect. It's important to, if you're being honest with someone, it's important to also think about whether the content of your honesty is actually something that's fair. So you might tell someone, you know, honestly, I think I shouldn't have to pick you up from the airport because I've already picked you up a billion times. And so you're being very honest. Congratulations, here's a cookie. But are you actually being fair? Is there an equitable distribution of assistance among your friendship? Is there equality in your friendship? And some people just ignore that completely. And so
I was just going to say, because it is interesting, because my dad always used to say character is destiny. And he was born in 1912 and was, you know, very sort of upright, sort of British gentleman, very, very honest, very considerate, very much used to say to my sister and I, it's all part of the common wheel. And he meant the Commonwealth. We had to consider our actions and the effect on others. And he was very big on that. So listening to this is very resonant for me. But of course, I'm also the kind of wild kind of girlfriend you've described. And I was a big trouble to him because I was this wild child. And, you know, must have been very, very challenging for him to produce a child like me. But as I'm older now, I'm 53, and I think if my dad were alive now, he would be proud of me. I really think that. But I obviously resonate with the character thing. But I think it's the chemistry and the character, isn't it? So it's because I'm obviously a very passionate person, and I love that excitement in life, whether it's relationship or, you know, anything I do. So what's your thoughts on that? Is it a kind of the combination of the two, or do you think ultimately the character has got to be, you know, is the one that's got to be the kind of pillar of it?
I think that it absolutely has to be both. I think both are equally important. And there's a recurring theme in the way I answer questions in the book. All the questions are of the form, should I date someone who blank? And I keep using the term 360 degrees. So the reason why I like the six pillars of chemistry is that, I mean, six pillars of character is that it gives a 360 degree view of their character. And the reason why, and when I talk about chemistry in the book, I don't just talk about the, you know, the 5 minutes of clicking that people talk about typically when they talk about chemistry. The first 5 minutes of dating, that clicking, I talk about a 360 degree view of your chemistry is also important. How do you enjoy conversations with this person? How do you enjoy going on trips with them? What does it feel like to just think about your partner when they're not there? What does it feel like to go to social gatherings with your partner? And so I tell people that they should instruct their chemistry with a 360 degree view of chemistry, and the character with the six pillars is obviously a 360 degree view of their character, but the two of them together, character and chemistry, as a whole is a 360 degree view of the way the relationship will play out. If there's always going to be a left brain side of the relationship, which is the logical side, which will be all the character implications, how they negotiate, what kind of person is this, will they do you right, will they do you wrong. But then there's always going to be an emotional side. There's going to be just the feel of the movement and the dynamic nature. And it's the kind of thing that I think people can't quite pin down, but they know is extremely real. And if I came up with a book just called Character and how you should date people with good character, it would be horrible, horrible advice, because if everyone has either dated someone or knows someone who's dated someone who fits this exact description, they say this person fits the bill for exactly what the kind of person I want in a relationship, but for some reason I just don't have it for this person. That's happened to me a couple of times, where I've been dating someone who I thought was a really, really good person, kind, giving, liberal with giving their time away to helping, very compassionate. But just honestly, I'm bored to death in that situation. And then if I came out with a book just called Chemistry, just go with your heart, or just follow your bliss, then we also have either been in a situation, or we know someone who's been in a situation where they did just that and they went through a roller coaster of emotions. I was just on Reddit the other day answering someone's question in the dating advice forum. And I said, you know what? I had a relationship exactly like this. It was an emotional roller coaster. And I realized that it was extremely exciting. It was filled with many highs, but also many lows, and that I was about to have a mental breakdown, and that I had to take care of my mind first. And so I just hit the eject button. And what I realized later was that half the reason why the relationship was like that was because of my own neurotic, overthinking persona. But then later, I kind of actually figured out that half of it was because the person had some character flaws, which whenever they expressed themselves, threw me for a loop. So a lot of times, your chemistry is actually informing you about aspects of their character. If someone does you wrong, but you don't quite get it, but your subconscious understands that you're being slighted, your subconscious can feel sometimes, for example, I think in the early stages of dating, sometimes there's a little bit of a cat and mouse where one person is teasing the other partner, and that becomes cute or initially kind of fun, maybe extremely charming, but maybe there's something in the tone of their voice. Maybe there's a little condescension in there, which is something that John Gottman emphasizes a lot. About being a key differentiator between relationships that will succeed and relationships that will fail.
Yeah, it's and the four horsemen, isn't it?
Yeah.
that's the, isn't it? It's being defensive, critical, or that contempt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or stonewalling. They're the sort of four things, aren't they, that if they're happening a lot in relationship, there's not much hope.
And so you may not rationally pick up on that right away. A character assessment may not actually pick that up, but your chemistry might be telling you in your heart that this relationship is not healthy for me because I just simply don't feel good. The health of your relationship should mirror in some way the healthy feeling you get physically in your body about the relationship. There shouldn't be a tension in your gut or in your stomach. Whenever you're around your partner or when you're away from your partner, there should be a net increase of positive energy. And so I like keeping things simple. And I think if you cover the logical side and you cover the emotional side, I'm very confident that you have your bases covered as far as evaluating the potential quality of a relationship.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's brilliant. I find it fascinating because you've distilled so much experience and obviously a lot of research as well, because you've been interested in personal development for a long time, haven't you?
Yes. I was given my first self-help book when I was 14 by my friend Charlotte, who I'm actually working on another book called Dear Charlotte. And the first self-help book I got was How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Oh, I read that.
Did you read that, Andy?
I did, yeah.
Dale Carnegie.
Yes, I read a few of his books.
When did you read that?
Years ago. Still got it somewhere.
How interesting.
Yeah. And that is still one of the best self-help books I've ever read. But between now and then, which is about 16 years, I've read maybe between 50 and 75 self-improvement books. And I'm just amazed at how poorly written, how poor the ideas actually are. So it was kind of a shame that my first one was so good because it set a high watermark. And it's taken me a while to find really good self-improvement books. It's probably the number one activity that I spend time on is topics of personal change into myself. And one of the things that I've learned is that a really good strategy for self-improvement, a really good trick or hack or technique, whatever you want to call it, is this idea of setting standards, but B, not just making up a standard, but having a standard that's grounded in reality and understanding what that standard is. And then by clarifying that, you can then use it to make measurements. Because I believe that what's the most important invention for helping people lose weight, for example? It's not Atkins, it's not the South Beach diet, it's the weighing scale. It's the scale that tells you how much you weigh. It's a tool for measuring something. And so if you know how to measure the thing that you're trying to fix, then you've already solved half of the problem. And so by understanding character, or when I discovered the six pillars of character, I felt like I found my measuring tool. I felt like I found the yardstick. It's like you can lock this up and put this in a vault in France and say, this is what the length of a meter actually is. This is how you measure someone's character. Someone finally actually said it. And I think a lot of people are very nervous about judging people. They're afraid of being too judgy. But there is a rational way of figuring out good behavior. And so that was one thing I set out to do. The second thing I've learned from reading all these self-help books is that there's just really two very, very common problems in self-help writing. They either focus on too few variables, sometimes many, many times just one variable. Follow your gut, follow your bliss, or look at one of the most popular self-improvement books, The Purpose-Driven Life, has one mantra. It's just follow your purpose. Just look at your purpose. What is your purpose? How does your purpose play out in relationships? How does your purpose play out in your jobs? And these books are effective at selling copies because people like single ideas. They're easy to talk about. But then on the other end of the spectrum, you have loquacious writers who have too many variables. Stephen Covey, who wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which is, I still love that book, and I think it's a very important book in self-help, and he passed away recently.
Oh, did he? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Yeah, because I love that book.
Yeah, yeah. He passed away, I think, on opening day of the Olympics.
Oh, wow.
And some of his ideas definitely worked itself into the way I think about self-improvement. But 7 habits, why these 7? If I'm missing one habit, is that okay? is this a 360-degree view of highly effective people? Or if you look at Neil Clark Warren's eHarmony with its 29 dimensions, which has you know, which is shrouded in words like, oh, what is you and your partner's cognitive modes? What is your physicality? It's almost like by using more complicated words, it gives it more meaning. And I was a mathematical and computational sciences major in college, and one thing we learned while graphing things is that things are really easy when you just have two variables. If you have a factory and you only have two variables that you have to minimize and maximize on, you can quickly plot what are the best options. But as soon as you add a third variable and you start having three dimensions, try drawing a line in three dimensions. You wouldn't know how to do it. Or try drawing a circle or a shape or a pattern. I think that when the more dimensions you start to add, then you start to bring in questions like, well, is it a point system? If there's 29 dimensions, what if she has 23?
I like that. I'm being the athlete here with the sort of going as high as I can in anything. Every time you've said anything, I think, right, have I got all those six character ones? Now it's the 29. it's becomes a competition, doesn't it?
Yeah, or another way of thinking it, what if they have all 29 dimensions, but they're only mediocre in every single of the 29 dimensions? What if what if their temperament matches with you, but not quite perfectly, and which I think could be a deal breaker, to use this this popular term among big city folk, like people in Sex and the City, or in people who live in New York, or people in Austin. I think for some people, if your temperaments, or why do I even say some people? I'm talking about myself. If my temperament doesn't match the temperament of the person I'm with, it's very, very unlikely I'm going to have good conversations with this person. And for me, what I've discovered is that conversations are a deal breaker for me. If I'm not having free-flowing, expansive, fun, semi-philosophical conversations with the person I'm with, then I have zero chemistry with that person. I think this is different for everybody. And I think I'm not at the point where I'm going to say that this is a rule, because I live by my book, and I'm going to evaluate someone just based on my total chemistry. But I've noticed a pattern in myself that the conversation thing, if it's lacking, kind of the whole relationship is lacking. And that's one dimension. And if I had 28 out of 29, according to eHarmony, then Neil Warren would give the green light on that. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good idea. You could end up wasting a year with someone who's missing the one key component that you actually needed and you didn't know you needed because you trusted some rubric. You listened to your priest or your friends or some other dating advice book that you read, and life is short.
Yeah, whereas your book, yeah, it is. Well, oh, we're older. We're still going, aren't we, Andy?
Just about, yeah.
Except, well, I say we're still going. You're nicely settledly married.
Yeah.
But I like your book, and I like character and chemistry as a. As a double thing, that is such, it makes sense apart from anything, but also it is then about the whole person, because clearly if all the aspects of character are there and there's that chemistry, which, you know, you love being in the space with them and you love the physical side and you love the conversation, then clearly that does give the long-term view looks really good. I can see that. And to read your book, where can people get it, Phil? Because, I mean, I know you sent it to me, which was wonderful. But so where can they get it?
They can get it at characterandchemistry.com. It's on Amazon. It's on iBooks. It's for Kindle. It's on Nook. It's on Kobo. It's everywhere. There's a lot of places where they can read it for free online, which I point out on characterandchemistry.com. And if some of your listeners aren't voracious readers, on characterchemistry.com, I have a 5-minute quiz that people can take that just takes them through the ropes of character and chemistry in about 5 minutes and will tell you whether the person you're dating is the one or not. It's like a crystal ball.
I like it.
I wonder how many people that are established in a relationship dare do that.
Ooh.
You know, this is probably the thing that scares me the most, but is also the most fun part, is that I'm pushing my book onto my friends and having good conversations with that. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh no, is this going to be the seed of doubt that's going to eventually lead to their, they're ending their relationship. And usually if someone tells me, oh, your quiz is interesting, that means that they took the quiz and they got a result that they weren't hoping for.
Oh, dear.
But then you could save them years.
You could save them years. You could save them a lifetime. Yeah. But then on the positive side, and this is something I did not expect, is that if they got a response that they like, if, for example, my friend Rusty Parks is just now starting a family with his wife. He took the quiz and at the end it said, congratulations, she is the one. And he immediately clicked on the post on Facebook button and said, your quiz is awesome, Phil. You're right, she is the one. And when I saw that, it got a lot of likes on Facebook and a lot of people commented on it. And so I didn't expect people to also use it as a way to celebrate and validate and confirm what they already knew about their partner.
Then I was said the other day, wasn't I, Andy, by a friend of mine said to me that he didn't think there was a man on the planet who wouldn't want to marry me. But there wasn't a man on the planet who was strong enough for me. That's why I'm saying this on my podcast. I'm always self-disclosing and then going, oh, should I have done that? So I don't know what would happen with the quiz with me. The man every woman wants to marry. But we were deciding, weren't we, Andy, that I wasn't necessarily wife material. I have done it a few times, Phil, but I was making Andy salad at the time. So I was doing very wife-like type of behaviour.
Yes, but my theory about you, Julia, is that you're wifey for short periods of time. You have like a timeout function.
So I'm sort of go into wife mode briefly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, short-term wife. And then you go into like Julia mode.
The short-term wife mode could be the time when the men think, oh, she'd be good to marry.
Actually, Phil, just before we go, have I got this right? Are you doing a motivational talk in March?
No, he did it in March.
Oh, it was last March, was it?
Yes.
How did it go?
Oh, it went fantastic. I was invited to Hallmark Cards to speak in front of about 100 and 150 creative professionals, so writers, artists, illustrators, and it was for their Trends Week conference. And the talk is available online. It's a really great talk. I'd spend the first half talking about how my first tarot card reading told me that I need to make tarot apps for the iPhone. And that was 2008. And then the second part is when I talk about how I got into meditation and how that helped me successfully launch 3D Porch, which is the number one 3D photo sharing site. And so a lot of the things I write about, a lot of the things I talk about, there's always an interplay between what you do inside. Well, there has to be an interplay between what you do inside and what happens on the outside. I believe that you can't do all this personal change. You can't just read all these self-help books or there's no point in doing it unless the changes actually manifest themselves in the real world. And so my talk was all about the interplay between personal change and changes in my work. And I think it went over really well. The conference was really fun. I shared the same billing with Temple Grandin, who She was on Time Magazine's top 100 most influential people at one point. Mm. And I also read one of some of her books. She has some self-improvement books. And yeah, that was good. That was great.
Sounds brilliant. Yeah. Sounds like I'm gonna have to look, find this talk and everything. We will have to have a little sort of search, won't we, Andy?
is it online at all, this speech?
Yeah, there's a link to the talk I just added a couple days ago on characterandchemistry.com.
We can be fans. We're fans now. We're fans and followers. And yes, have you got a Twitter name and everything?
Absolutely. Yeah. I have the Twitter account that I think you want to follow is called Philosophistry, which I think is kind of a mouthful.
We better put that in the show notes, Julia, rather than try and spell it out online. Yes. Audially, shall I say.
How do we do it?
Send us a link, Phil. Send us an email and we'll copy and paste it onto the show notes.
Yes.
Right, we'll do that.
Oh, he's doing it right away. So, Phil, thanks so much for coming on. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Julia.
Yeah, really good. I'm really glad that you contacted me. Thank you. Very, very interesting indeed.
Okay, so it's goodbye from me, Andy. And it's goodbye from...
me, Julia.
And just to let you know, we're having a little holiday, aren't we, Julia?
We are. I
mean, this is the last episode, episode 99, season one.
And we're going to have a holiday through August, and we're going to commence again the end of September, aren't we? So we're having very long holiday.
Yes,
we're having a sort of university holiday.
Yeah, because Julie's doing lots of going away and running.
I am. I'm running up mountains and things, yes, and going to Lisbon and all sorts of different experiences.
So have a great what's left of the British summer. Well, you're probably not all listeners in Britain, are you, both of you? One of you must be Australian. And we'll see you later.
Okay, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to The Bare Truth, and we hope you've enjoyed it. You can read my blog posts at www.runningtolearn.com. I'm also a healer and a coach, and I work with people on many levels to help them live with more joy and creativity. Visit www.juliaarmstrong.com.
And if you want to hear more of my podcasts, hop along to wireworldmedia.co.uk and you'll find some links there. And as well as presenting and software development, we do audio and video for web.